There are a lot of things that matter to me. Family, community, culture, and peace of mind. Hi, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and when balancing life, I have to say nothing brings more comfort than having support. And when it comes to ensuring those things that matter to you the most, State Farm offers the support with an agent available in person or on the phone to discuss your coverage options. Support when you need it, however you choose. That's State Farm's way. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to episode 2 of our very special series, In the Heights, El Sueñito, with star creator Lin-Manuel Miranda and longtime collaborators, writer-producer Kiara Alegría Judez and executive music producer Alex Lacomoire. How is everyone?
Good, great.
So we're going to pick up right where we left off. You guys were talking about how you guys met and how the musical was coming together. And I feel like a lot of people go, oh, it must be easy to get a musical on Broadway.
No, like... it just took all of our 20s.
So I want to talk about, like, okay, you finish the writing of it. And are you staging it as you go? Are you talking about the process of getting it up and on its feet and on a stage? Or what was the stage? How did it happen?
Well, finishing the writing is doing... That sentence is doing a lot of work because I never felt like we finished the writing of it. You know, again, we are two unknown writers in the world. We're working with Tommy Kail, an unknown director. Our most famous creative team member is Alex Lacomoire, and he is the associate conductor on Wicked. We are just doing reading after reading. And what we had, which was really incredible, was the support of Jill Furman and the support of Kevin McCullum, who was a producer on Rent, the musical that made me want to start writing musicals, and Avenue Q. And so we were lucky enough to go to, there's like major kind of milestones in that writing, one of which was the O'Neill Theater Center, which sort of accepts different shows in reading and workshop phases. And we spent 2 weeks on Eugene O'Neill's Old Estate. I don't think I slept more than 4 hours a night. We just wrote and wrote and wrote. You bring up your actors with you. There are people who bring you coffee and make copies for you. Interns who are also aspiring playwrights and theater makers. And Kiara saw a ghost in the middle of writing one night. I didn't see a ghost, but I remember writing Black out there. I had a Casio keyboard and I would wander around writing Blackout. And actually, I think we have a demo of it. And what's amazing about the demo is you can hear like the mic improving quality over the years as I continue to rewrite Blackout from 2005 all the way till 2008 when we opened. So in the beginning, the mic is very much like this. And then by the end, the mic is getting better because like technology is advancing. So you can hear the new sections from the old sections, which is funny because the first thing we had to do for the movie version was rewrite a section of the Blackout. I feel like I'll be rewriting the Blackout as long as I live.
Yeah. Can we play that?
Oye, ¿qué pasó?
Blackout.
Vino el apagón, ay Dios. Oye, ¿qué pasó?
Blackout.
Vino el apagón, ay Dios.
Yo, can't see. Quit shoving, motherfucker. It's an oven and we better back out. This is a blackout. Chill, for real, or we're gonna get killed. Cause we're on all the taxis. Everybody's got a daylight disguise.
I hear the Casio.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yep. Oh, my God.
And like, I can hear how tired I was. I can hear the vocal parts that were recorded at 3 a.m. and I'm trying to be quiet, but still get, I'm like, ooh, ooh. And I'm like trying not to wake up my bunkmates.
What year is that demo?
That's
2005.
2005 through 2008, because there's sections in it that didn't exist in the first version. I think that version is the one that has We Are Powerless way too many times, because I found it and loved it so much that I put it throughout the thing. And they're like, all right, we're going to have to have them singing We Are Powerless the whole time.
Easy.
Some of them are powerless. So that was, I mean, it's a lot of being exhausted and writing that. And then, you know, we performed at the end of our 2-week O'Neill experience, and our producers said that thing that no one wants to hear. It's not ready. Mm. There's still too many storylines. I still don't quite know what the focus is. And that's very tough to hear after the work and the time we'd been doing. But it was the right call, because we all turned to each other. At this point, Nina Rosario had a brother in the show named Lincoln Rosario. That was a major character. And we all turned to each other and said, I think we have to kill Lincoln.
Oh, no.
And he was played by an amazing singer and legend in our community, Huey Dunbar at the O'Neill of DLG. So, like, his songs were amazing, and he sang the hell out of them. But we realized if we take out Lincoln, suddenly Nina gets all of this richness, and she gets these complex issues with her father that we were exploring through Lincoln, and Nina becomes this like much richer and much more multidimensional character. And so we then did a workshop of that in 2006.
So who was that original cast? Was it just people you knew?
So many original casts. I mean, there were people who were really there in the early versions. There were people who were just there at the O'Neill and then popped up later in our lives. Rick Negron is a great example. He played Kevin for the workshop and then like would go on to be our second Kevin on Broadway. And then there were a few people who were constants throughout. Doreen Montalvo was the first person to audition for us in 2002. She predates Kiara and Alex by 2 years and was in kind of every version of the show and became so, played Benny's mother when Benny's mother was a character, played Camila, played Daniela, played everybody, and then became the cover for every single one of those roles. And she actually passed away last year. She was the first of our Heights family to pass away. And I'm so grateful that she actually plays her role in the movie. She is that woman who sings, Mira, Nina, no me preocupo por ella in Breathe.
Mira, Nina, no me preocupo por ella.
And she's that on Broadway and in the movie. And I'm so glad we never imagined anyone else for the movie but her. But she,
yeah.
I think she tracks the longest line. But people like Janet DeCall, Mandy Gonzalez did an early workshop, then booked a Broadway show, then came right. back to us to originate Nina on Broadway.
Yeah.
So, you know, so many actors over the years gave us so much information. Chris Jackson began by playing a Latino character. Benny was a Latino character, but then Chris yeah. was just so effortlessly charming. Yeah. That was actually one of the things that came out of the O'Neill, was you've got Chris, who's so charming and effortless, and he's playing this Latino character, and it's like, just start writing for Chris. And then we decided that character is African-American, and what does that add to sort right. of the mosaic of this neighborhood? And so, again, like, our actors gave us a lot of information wow. at every step of
wow.
the process.
There's so many, again, we're going to talk about the movie in episode 3, but there are so many hidden Easter eggs in the movie, like you just said, you know, of people playing these tiny little parts and they pop up. A lot of your Hamilton buddies as well. So after the O'Neill, it goes yeah. to...
We go to like one more workshop where we sort of start working on the dance and what it looks like on its feet. And that was in 2006. And we uh-huh. recorded 3 songs from that workshop with like a 3-piece band. And then we open off-Broadway in the winter of 2007. And you talk about when the writing is done. I told you that sentence did a lot of work. Kiara, at this point in previews, is 9 months pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
And we are up against 2 deadlines. and Kiara, I think you should take over this part of the storytelling of like really when we kind of were pens down off-Broadway.
You know, the writing is done in theater when the show, quote unquote, freezes, when you cannot make any more script changes because technically there's no more time left to rehearse them.
Yeah. And your actors need to have a set thing to get their heads and hearts around.
Right.
It is a deadline based decision, you know, and so off Broadway. And yeah, I was there for these workshops. Every step of the way, you know, I did see a ghost at the O'Neill, and I wrote a lot of scenes that got thrown out too. So there's like ghost scenes that also were created. yeah, the character of Lincoln, you know, became a kind of In the Heights ghost too. But by the time we got to off Broadway, there were some songs and some scenes off Broadway that we still couldn't crack. We tried, you know, and we made strides, but we could feel we weren't totally there. And so the show was going to freeze at 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. I can't remember that day.
It was 5 p.m.
I'm trying to write basically a punchline to button the scene, to end the scene on a kind of bright note. But I think Lynn and I knew that the song and the scene probably didn't work. He had done so many lyric fixes on this song. I had done so many.
It was a song Chris Jackson sang called That's What's Up, which uh-huh. is a Chris Jackson-ism that I turned into a song.
And it's like, it just felt like it was trying to oversimplify something that we needed to let be more complicated. So I was just trying to write a funny line. I'm throwing lines at Mandy Gonzalez. I'm throwing lines at Chris Jackson. And then the stage manager was like, that's it. So I didn't even know. I didn't even remember what was the last line I threw at her. It was just like, okay, I guess that's it. And I went off to dinner and I went into labor about 20 minutes after I threw that last line at her. So my whole body was like, okay, you can release now.
Yeah.
And we had a preview that night, because this is the thing when you're working on theater, it's not that the show freezes or you finish writing the script and then performances start. No, you have this section of previews where you're seeing mm-hmm. what is the audience laughing at? Where is the audience crying? Where are they leaning in? And really, you could feel the breathlessness. You're watching their faces and going, okay, where are they like creating their to-do list for what they have to do in the morning? You know, like where are they tuning out? And then you're noticing that and you're paying attention. You're trying to write a better punchline. You're trying to write a better scene for the next day. And you do that for a few weeks. And that is mm-hmm. so stressful. And there's so much going on. And you're just, part of you is just going, I hope they like me. I hope they like me. And the other part of you is going, all right, enough of that. Like, do the best writing you can.
Shout out to Kiara's daughter, Cecilia, for waiting till the show was frozen to be like, all right, mom.
So what was the reaction? What was the early audience reaction? Audience, and then I want to talk about critical.
There was 96,000. I mean, there's some things that just become consistent laugh lines, which is really cool. There's some things that are laugh lines more when there's more of a Latino audience versus a general audience. And then there's some things like 96,000, for instance, is such an explosive song. And you could feel the audience. This is, I'm talking off Broadway here. You could feel the audience just elevate. You could feel the energy be electric in the theater. But then somehow by the end of the song, that had dissipated. So that was one we knew we wanted to work on more to keep building that electricity and that excitement all the way through to the very end. But again, we ran out of time and we didn't totally realize that in the moment. And same with It Won't Be Long Now. But with that one, we wanted it to have a softer ending. So how do you kind of manage those like explosive endings, those softer endings, and keep the audience with you where you want them to be? So there's a lot of watching and learning. But it was really fun. You know, you could feel just like when Alex listened to that cassette and heard the clave beat, you could feel the audience have that experience of like, what is this? Who are these people? You know, they come in, they sit down, they've had too many drinks before coming to the theater, or they've had a long work day. And that clave beat just starting out, it does something. It's like, come on. It's like a very soft, gentle entrance. And that you could feel like we were onto something.
Yeah.
The clave beat is, it's like kind of the DNA sequence of a lot of Latin rhythms. So it can go 2-3 or 3-2. So you've heard people clap it in the dance clubs. It's just. Do we do it in that direction for In the Heights, or do we do?
We bump, do 3-2 at the
bump,
top.
Bump, 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 bump. Yeah. Bump. Bump, bump, bump. Lights up on Washington
Heights. Up at the break of day, I wake up and I got this little punk I gotta chase away. Pop the grade at the crack of dawn, sing while I wipe down the awning. Hey, y'all, good morning.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think people forget, we ran close to 7 months off Broadway and we did fine. Like, the people that loved the show and kept coming back, and we were a pretty cheap ticket. We were in a theater that no longer exists on 37th Street and 10th Avenue. You know, the cast would go to their coffee shop, which was the gas station around the corner, where they had a little Dunkin' stand. But that neighborhood, like, it wasn't really a neighborhood yet. And it was hard for people to find us. And, you know, our producers were pretty committed to moving us on Broadway because we got lovely reviews. But there were a lot of people in the industry where they were like, you're not even selling out your off-Broadway house. Why are you coming in? How is that possible? And we knew, you know, and again, like, it was very surreal for me as one of the writers to perform in this show every night, knowing what I wanted to do if I got another chance to keep writing with Kiara and land the button of 96,000 and land, you know, the end of It Won't Be Long Now, and reconfigure what happens instead of That's What's Up. Like, we had the mental checklist. And again, this isn't, it's so hard because it's, you only learn by doing. This is something we talk about in the industry a lot. Like, all the internships in the world will not prepare you for putting a show on in front of an audience. And I had 7 months of information in a tactile way as a performer as to what works every night, what only works when there's Latinos there, what works when there's tourists there. It takes them a little longer to get the Usnavi name joke. and so we just, like, when we finally got the call that we had a theater and we were moving to Broadway, we had so much information. We knew exactly what we wanted to do and we were surgical about it. Like, I just remember, like, I know exactly what needs to happen to elevate this to the next place.
Wow. And you also know what works every night. So you know the tent poles to stick with and to build towards, like Paciencia y Fe. You could feel people connecting on a deep level in that theater, people connecting with their memories, people connecting, you know, people grieving, people being in gratitude to remember their elders or saying, hey, I'm that elder, you know, and loving to see their stories.
And now I'm wide awake, a million years too late. I talk to you, imagining what you do, remembering what we went through.
The those yeah. are the things that you know you're going to keep and just even build up more and mm-hmm. you know that you're aiming for as you do some of the changes.
Yeah. And Alex, what do you remember about that time? Did you have the same emotions of like, I get it, like, guys, we got it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because like Lynn, I was performing the show every night. I was conducting the show. And it's a different experience because, you know, I would have my headphones on and be very concerned about getting my piano parts played right and leading the band and connecting with the cast. So, you know, it wasn't the same experience as someone like Kiara who could like actually sit in the house with the audience and feel what that energy is. I mean, yes, I could hear the applause. I could hear the reactions. But like Lynn said, I think that period of time that we had between off-Broadway and Broadway was so crucial. Because I often think to myself, guys, I don't know, like, Kiara and Lynn, how you feel, but when I think about how different the show was off-Broadway, the fact that we had songs like Plan B off-Broadway, like, there's entire songs.
Was Plan B off-Broadway? I've blocked it out entirely.
Dude, I'm telling you. It's like, the club number ended differently. You know, 96,000 had a different button, all those things. And we just made all these changes because, as Lynn said, we knew what it needed. We knew how to make it better. And we just like drilled down and we just spent all that time just really, you know, cutting things that we didn't think needed to be there, making endings stronger, more powerful, augmenting the size of the band, you know, adding rich moments. Like, for example, off Broadway, Carnaval didn't have the whole Arriba esa bandera moment at all. All those things happened between off-Broadway and Broadway in what is probably a 4 to 5 month span, which now in retrospect seems crazy to me that we accomplished that much in that short amount of time. But we knew what we wanted to do. We just went in and drilled. Like the whole beginning of Carnaval.
Oh my
As
God.
Lynn said, once we could tell that things weren't landing in the way that we intended them to, that we weren't getting that sense of either connection or applause, we can just tell that the audience wasn't just feeling like completely satisfied at the end of a song. So we would just try to do what we could to get the songs to that level.
There's a term in musical theater called the button, and that's the final moment in the song that makes you go, ah! And start like clapping. And it's a literal term. It's a practical term. Like the lights will bump and that gives you a subconscious cue that this is over. And I hadn't gone to button school. No one teaches you how to write a great button to a song. And most pop songs fade out. Like you don't learn that in pop music.
Right.
And so I really went to button school between off-Broadway and Broadway. And we really like, you know, watched the musical numbers that we loved and studied how they ended and figured out how to apply that to our own thing. And for opening night on Broadway, Tommy Cale gives me a box and it's a box of buttons of every shape and size. That was my opening night
present. I want to talk about that. Opening night on Broadway, were you like, holy shit, this is happening? Like, what were you feeling, Lynn, at the time? And give us a picture. Like, where were you living? Were you like, I hope I make money on this.
Yeah. I again,
were you eating?
Yeah. Again, I'm pretty, you know, I'm a New Yorker, so I'm pretty morbid. I'm pretty superstitious. And I just was like, please, let's get this musical out of our heads and onto a stage. So for me, the first real triumph was the first preview on Broadway. And I made some crucial mistakes on that day. One, which is, my dad invited everyone he knew, and they were in the front row. So literally all the people I love most in the world, like my college friends and my elementary school friends, are in the front row to this thing that is not done yet. And I was like, no, come back in a month. We have so much to learn. But also, I don't know if I've ever told this story before, but again, I'm in my Broadway dressing room for the first time. It's like 5 minutes to places, which means the cast is going to gather in the basement and do a prayer in our prayer circle. And my family is hanging, and I'm like, okay, you guys got to go. I got to get like my head right and do the show. And my family all leaves, and my sister stays behind. My sister, who is maybe the quietest member of my family, probably because she feels so much. And she turns to me. This is 5 minutes before my Broadway debut. And she goes, Lin-Manuel, I just want to say all those times that you wrote songs at the piano when we were little, and I never listened, and I wish I'd listened more, and is like crying. And I'm like, I can't have this conversation now, Sita. I'm about to go do a 2.5-hour show. Like, this is a wonderful moment of emotional catharsis, but like, not now. Not now.
Oh my God.
I like pushed her sobbing out the door.
Oh my God.
So it was all like too much too soon. And then we learned again so much through Broadway previews, and that suite of No Me Diga, our really funny number, into 96,000, which now has a killer button, into Paciencia y Fe, into When You're Home, is this like crazy quadruple punch now, and really gives us this incredible head of steam going into the rest of the show. And so we just learned so much in that month, so that by opening night we really felt like this is our best swing. Like I really felt confident, like I'm sure there's a better show here, but I don't know how to write it yet. Like we really we did so much work in that month.
Yeah.
Can I tell my opening night story?
Please, yeah. Alex.
So one of my favorite memories is when we get to the finale of the show on opening night. And my family had flown up from Miami. And mind you, like my family had seen workshops along the way, because as soon as I told them, you guys, I'm working on the show and it's got Latin music in it, there's Spanglish, they were fans from In the Heights, like, you know, before anyone knew what the show was.
Right.
And we get to the finale and there's a moment where I don't actually play piano anymore. I gave all the piano parts to the second keyboardist so that I could lift up my hands and conduct and look at the stage and conduct the choir. And we get to that moment where, you know, on the conductor's podium, I have the best seat in the house, right? Like no one is closer to the stage watching it than me. And then Lin-Manuel's right up there in front of me and he sings, he raps that passage, I could say goodbye to you smiling. I found my island, I've been on it this whole time, I'm home.
And I can say goodbye to you smiling.
And Lin's voice breaks just enough because he just gets overwhelmed with emotion that I get overwhelmed with emotion. So my hands are up in the air conducting, and then it just hits me like, oh my God, we made it.
Aww.
We're here. We open. And I just start sobbing. I just, my head goes down and like my hands are still waving in the air. And I'm just like, we were not controlled because like I just felt, oh my God, we did it. You know, like here we are, you know, as we talked earlier about friends who found each other. And we were just creating art because we believe in something. You know, it wasn't like, oh, we're doing this because we want to be famous. You know, it wasn't like we're doing this because we want to make money. Like, no, we're getting together because we love what we do. And there was no other real goal other than to just make something that we were proud of. And to make something that felt like it represented us and make something with our friends. And everything else was just like icing on the cake.
Yeah.
And to know that we had achieved it. Just, the opening night just felt like a mile marker. And I suppose all those years of work, all those nights staying up late to worry about whether or not the hi-hat should play on beat 4 or not. You know, stressing about every choir harmony, all that stuff. It just came, it's just that sense of completion. And it just felt so wonderful to have arrived there, because I felt like everything in my life led up to that moment. And it was a big mile marker for me.
That is a beautiful way to wrap up episode 2 about the play. This show went on to be nominated for 13 Tony Awards and won 4, run over 1,000 performances on Broadway, and it launched a truly remarkable journey for Lin-Manuel Miranda and his collaborators that would take them through Hamilton, which won 11 Tonys and a Pulitzer Prize, no less, music for a massive hit Disney animated film, Moana, and a lot of trips to the White House, and then the proposal to make In the Heights into a full feature film with Warner Brothers. That's where we're going to pick it up for our third and final episode, dropping tomorrow, June 4th. Lynn, will you tell us about the book, though? Because the book is the play, correct?
Yeah. So again, if In the Heights was born as an idea at age 19, it's old enough to drink. I'm 41 years old. It's our baby is a grown thing. And you know, during the pandemic, we got together and sort of started chronicling the journey with Jeremy McCarter, who wrote the book about the making of Hamilton. He's written these essays on the 20-year journey from Wesleyan to from that first production at Wesleyan to the movie version that we're all going to see. And Kiara's written essays for that book, and I've written annotations to all the lyrics. So a lot of these stories are also in that book. And that'll come out June 15th. It's called In the Heights, Finding Home.
June 15th, the book. And tomorrow we have the third and final episode of In the Heights, El Sueñito. This has been a production of the My Cultura Podcast Network, and we will see you tomorrow.
Diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.